5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. Da!
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening. It is the new Panic Room episode 227, which should have been last week, but due to technical difficulties, thanks Blog Talk people, we missed last week. And I it's been that long, I almost forgot what buttons to press, but there you go. And it does obviously mean that it's been 2 long weeks since I spoke to the old mate Booker X Steeder, so I'm gonna bring her on now.
Come on, I'm with you.
Maxine. How are you this evening?
Oh, I am here. You know, that's I'm here. I don't know. It's been a yucky day today. It's been all rainy and dark and dreary, and I've wanted nothing more than to nap all day long. That's all I wanted was a nap.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, on the plus side, it's been lovely weather here. So that's the main thing.
You know,
It's funny actually. It was grim this morning. When my son went off to work, and I said, you just wait, it's going to be blazing hot this hour. And it was literally by sort of about 10, half past 10. It was lovely, lovely and warm. And, you know, of course, the problem with it, as soon as it starts getting warm here this time of year, so the mosquitoes start coming in, you know. So we have those big stripy ones that are like humbugs with wings, and they're just the biggest fucking things. You can hear them coming at you. It is terrifying. They're terrifying.
We had a beautiful day yesterday. We actually worked outside. We just brought our laptops outside and, you know, worked out there, and it was just gorgeous. Yes, yes. So, to go from that to today, you know, I had to get my sweater out again and sloshing through the rain. I'm like, are you serious? So, you know, but, but I'm happy that we're, you know, on. We were talking about it earlier. We had that last week crap, and then the week before that, we had an awful echo, and, man, these Blog Talk, they better get their crap together. We're taking our toys elsewhere.
We're going to take our show somewhere that deserves us, so they've had their chat. And the thing, I mean, we had a run a while ago, and I remember writing to them, and nothing.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
you know, but they don't care. They make sure they take their money each month. So they will miss us when we've gone. Put it that way.
That's true. Yes.
But on the positive side, we're here, and you know, and in effect,
yay,
full effect, and you know, I do miss it. I really miss it when we're not, and it's mm-hmm. like, I guess this is our social life. This is me, you know, being with people. And to be fair, I can cope with this. You know, actually going and meeting people. Just even I find Zoom meetings a bit oppressive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I've
sort of got into a thing with a client, and he liked the Zoom meeting. Oh, excuse me. I'm boring myself now, you know. When back in my previous life, when I was in sales and marketing, we used to have every month, you'd have a monthly meeting because it was more end of month meeting, you know. And all the best management books say, don't do that. Don't have meetings for the sake of meeting. But we would, because it was habit. We had to have a monthly meeting. And they were so dull, you know. And here I am, and, you know, the meeting, they run on, and it's, you know, because the thing is, you know, each piece, with these Zoom, you know, things, you know, each person's got their bit to prepare, and so you have your 10 minutes, and then I don't care what so-and-so's doing with whatever she's doing, because that has no impact. It's nothing I have to do, nothing I need to be aware of, so I don't care, is the honest truth. I can just sit there and try and look like I'm not fiddling on my phone. You know what I'm like for fiddling when I'm bored.
Oh gosh,
try not to look like I'm actually just playing on my phone, just doing stuff on my phone. But it's I kind of hoped I'd left all that behind me.
No such luck. Yeah.
Well, at least it's not a full day. We used to get actually a full day meeting and. Although sometimes if it was sometimes we'd stay away and have a rest, because that's the other thing, you know, sometimes I'd have a wild night before, and I'd be hungover and tired as well, so that probably didn't help. That probably didn't help.
Probably not. No. You know, I wanted to, this is kind of funny, and I wanted to tell you about this. We had an audition for one of our books that are up there on ACX, and I was listening to the audition, and he starts off really strong and really good, and then like he misses something while he's reading it. Like he flubs a line, and you could tell he was getting mad at himself. He's like, "Ugh!" And then he'd start over again, and then flub another line, and be like, "Ugh!" And this happened like for a whole 5 minutes, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, this guy needs like, I don't know, some deep breathing exercises or something."
So did he obviously didn't think to do it again?
Yeah, that's what I'm, you know, because I've had that before where somebody will submit something and then submit another, you know, whatever. But no, he just kept right on going and getting more and more frustrated with himself. And I actually felt bad for the lad. I really did. But not bad enough to hire him, but still bad.
Well, we can't hire somebody who's going to get pissy with themselves as a narrating an audiobook. No,
I know, but it was entertaining though. It was very entertaining. I'll say that.
you really, really, really need to get out a little bit more, I think. So.
I know. I need to be let off the porch, is the way, you know, because I got out yesterday, but I need to be let off the porch.
Yeah. No, well, there you go. That's the problem here. As soon as it starts getting a little bit, it doesn't just get a little bit warm. I mean, bearing in mind, it was only a few weeks ago, we were in the middle of sub-zero temperatures. And now it starts warming up. And you couldn't go and sit outside because you would just fry. Between frying and getting eaten alive by mosquitoes, you know, you just wouldn't survive it. You get, you know, 10 minutes work done, you'd be dead.
Yeah, I think we went up to maybe about 78 yesterday, and it was breezy and just gorgeous. It really was.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
it was, seriously, it was Tuesday here, it was in the 90s.
Oh, God, no.
Seriously.
No.
Tuesday evening, it was in the 90s. Like, this is ridiculous. What is going on?
As much as I complain when it's cold, because I'm, you know, cold, I hate the heat. I do. I hate sweating. And see, the bad thing is actually the right before you start to sweat, I don't know, I'm like, I'm almost sweating, and that makes me mad. It just makes me angry. So I don't like the, I'm more of a nice fall type of person.
No, I like the warmth here. I do, it's good for my old bones, you know, but, being out in it is, it can be, obviously, you know, when I'm on the run up to summer, it'll not be another couple of months, it'll just be unbearable out there, you know, so there's that to look forward to, but it's nice that we have the warmth. I do like it. I've been having a lifetime of, you know, the British temperate climate. You know, it is nice, so. Although the sub-zero temperatures, my knee still hasn't fully recovered. So I have a knee that is very sensitive to cold weather. Yeah, I know when there's a cold front coming, like days ahead of time, my knee starts aching. And it was almost unbearable when we had the cold temperatures. But it's still not right, bless it, my poor little knee.
Aww.
But there you go. What have we got? I presume we've got. I mean, did you bother to organize a show? Did you just assume it wasn't going to work again this week?
No, you know, and that is probably the worst thing when I have two amazing guests and then our show just decides to crap out. So, yeah, we do. We have great guests tonight. We have both horror authors, which I you know, it's going to be a scary night, everybody. So we have horror authors. Sherry Sebastian Gabriel will be on later on in the show, and our first guest will be Tim Mayer. And
brilliant.
So.
Good. We're having a horror night. I like that. I do like a good horror night. Always fun. So I think we should. I shall let you introduce our first guest.
All righty. Our first guest of the night is horror author Tim Mayer.
Yay.
Hello.
Yay.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. How are you guys?
Good. We're good. We're just having a good old moment. So what part of the country are you in? And what's the weather like there?
I am unfortunately in New Jersey. And the weather is Today it was actually pretty good. It was like 70s, like low 70s. But yesterday it like rained all day, like terribly. So it's, you know, it's all right.
Boo.
It's getting warmer out. Yeah.
So hey, look, I see as though you're in New Jersey. I've got to ask the question: why is it? Like I was speaking as a Brit, you know, why is it that New Jersey is like the joke state? I mean, all the comedy shows always, you know, they want a joke state. It's always New Jersey. Is there a reason for that, or is it just something that caught
we're
on?
We're just so fucking weird here. I don't know. There's just like there's things about New Jersey that you would probably find unbelievable. Like you can't make it's the only country or the only state in the country that you can't make a left turn. You have to do like a roundabout or what we call them U-turns or jug handles because it looks like a jug handle. So that's kind of weird. That's like a weird thing. And then I don't know. We're obnoxious people, I guess. I don't know how else to explain it.
Interesting. That's great. You can't do a left turn. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah.
Oh, we also don't pump our own gas. We're not allowed to pump our own gas. That's illegal here.
Really? You have to have it pumped for you. Wow.
Yeah, you have to have it serviced for you. So, like, the first time I ever left New Jersey to drive it in another state, I had no idea what the hell I was doing. And I went to the guy behind the counter at the gas station. I was like, can you help me pump my own gas? And he looked at me like I was a crazy person.
Oh, really? That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Wow.
I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Wow, that is... Yeah, well, I can see why it's a joke statement. I noticed because, I'm a big Family Guy fan, and you know every other joke, you know, every time they want a joke place, it's New Jersey, and I think the Simpsons do it as well. I mean, you sort of pick up. There's a lot of the comedy shows. It's always New Jersey, which is kind of funny. So at least we know now. The no left turn thing is just astounding. That's great. I love that.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm sure there's a good story of why that is. I just don't know it. I'm not that into New Jersey where I would actually go.
Wow, that is awesome. So, Tim, you're here to talk to us about Malignant Summer. Tagline on June 1st, 2021, The Bad Things Will Bloom. So a bit of foreshadowing there. You obviously, maybe you know something that we don't. It would not surprise me. It would not surprise me. So tell us a little bit about it, Tim.
Yeah, sure. So Malignant Summer is a very long coming-of-age novel set in 1998. And it's basically about a local chemical plant that is dumping toxins into the town's water supply and making people very sick, particularly children. And so there's a group of kids who are kind of like onto it, and they basically investigate and try to find out what's going on in their town, and there may or may not be a supernatural force at work.
Ooh. that sounds pretty gripping. That sounds pretty gripping. And what was the inspiration for that? I mean, how have you been? This is like a pandemic inspired book, or did it all begin before that?
I actually wrote this book in 2019, pretty much all of 2019. Like I said, it's a pretty big book. It's the first draft was just shy of 200,000 words.
Wow.
Which, yeah, for like non-book people listening, that's probably about like 600 pages for like a regular paperback. It's a lot. I actually ended up cutting it down to like 185, I think, which is still pretty big. But
that's
anyway,
huge.
It took me all of 2019 to write it. Basically, the idea came about. It's actually kind of based a little bit on a true story, or I should say, it's like influenced by a true story. Back in my hometown of Tomsworth, New Jersey, in the 90s, this actually kind of happened. The local chemical plant was literally dumping toxins into the town's water supply, and a lot of kids got sick from it. So that's kind of like the backdrop of the novel, and I kind of wanted to set this novel in that type of situation. So, yeah, it's just cool. It's just a supernatural horror movie, like in the vein of It, which is like one of my favorite horror novels ever written. Or like Robert McCammon's Boy's Life is also another big influence on this book. So,
yeah,
it's just like my big coming of age supernatural horror novel.
Fantastic. I'm in awe, you know. I mean, it's pretty much like two books worth, you know. So, well done on that one. Well, and for sticking with it as well. And I guess it's one of those. I mean, it's like, okay, we'll pick up It because it was a big fat doorstopper. That was like 600 pages, I believe. But it didn't feel like a big fat doorstopper. You know, I remember reading it and getting towards the end, and I was so disappointed that I was getting towards the end. I just did not want it to finish, you know.
Yeah, no, that novel is enormous. I think I've read it like 3 or 4 times, and I listened to the audiobook once, which is actually Stephen Weber does like the narration for the audiobook, and it's fantastic. But yeah, it's so good. And you're right, like when you're reading that book, you know, it's long, it's very detailed. King goes into details that probably he doesn't need to go into, but it's just so gripping and fascinating that you can't stop reading. So.
It was like spending time with friends. I you know, when I finished it, I actually missed the characters. You know, you spent a long time with them, but like you said, because of the detail, you felt like they were personal friends. You know, and I think that's something that King is very good at, is getting you invest in the characters, because it just has those. Just those little bit of detail that a lot of authors just don't even bother with. You know, they'll tell you what they look like and then obviously get on the story. But, you know, I've said it before about It. You know, you could take, you know, the supernatural element out of it. You could take the clown and the whatever it was, you know, the evil being out, and it would still be a damn good book. It would be a really good coming of age book, even without all of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. On Twitter, I saw your post about watching the Shining miniseries, and I loved that. I did. I really did. It wasn't too long ago that we watched that again, because I've seen it a few times, and I love it. And you know, everybody talks about, you know, Kubrick's and how amazing that is, and whatever. I like the miniseries. I really do. I thought it was so much more closer to the book, and I really liked it. And you know, there are a couple of scenes in that just really just creep me out. When you know, they know something's going on, but they're not exactly sure what. And the elevator, when they had that the confetti in the elevator, and she's like throwing it back at him, and I'm like, oh my god, that just terrified me. I don't know why, but you know, it just terrified me.
It's great. I love it. I'm rewatching it for a podcast I do with my other writer friends called Final Guys, and they always make fun of me because I like that version more than the Kubrick one. And so we're having like this our 200th episode special, and so we decided to do that. And so it's basically going to be them ripping the movie apart and then me trying to defend it. So. I'm going back and I'm like taking notes, and it's just it really is an awesome adaptation of a wonderful book too. You know, that's another one of, you know, King's classic books. He wrote the script for that too. So that's kind of probably why it's a lot closer to the original material. But yeah, it's great. It's the acting and like the entire cast is spectacular.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing too with the original movie. If you go back and watch that again, I tried not too long ago, and I was just going, oh my god, and I'm sorry, you know, Jack Nicholson is great, and the cast, but still, for me anyway, the performances just seem so wooden. I mean, there's the one. Danny's sitting on Jack's lap and stuff, and I'm just like, I don't know. It just was so the acting was terrible. I was like, I'm not sold here at all. So, I mean, yeah, definitely.
Well,
I
tried to watch the movie again probably about a year ago now. And, even the beginning, you know, where Nicholson is having the interview and that. And you could, again, say Kubrick was supposed to be lauded as a genius director. The direction was terrible. You could tell that, Nicholson was playing to an empty chair. And then they had the guy, and he was playing to an empty chair. Because you can tell, I've directed a few short movies, nothing, but there is a difference between, you know, what you do is, if you want to, obviously you want to get that shot, you have somebody stood behind the camera, you know, so they're playing to somebody, not just a camera, because there is a difference.
Right.
And I picked up on that. And to be fair, I on your behest, I tried to get into the miniseries, and I couldn't get into that either. The book, I love the book. The book is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't get into that either, so I gave up, is the honest truth. I just didn't bother.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like the miniseries a lot. We actually watched it's three parts, and we actually watched the first two tonight. And I have to say, the second part is much stronger than the first part. So, I mean, I feel like you should maybe give it another shot.
Power through, James.
Power through it. Yeah, I've got such a growing list of stuff that people say, oh, you've got to watch this. And it's just like, you know, there's just ain't enough time. That's the problem. But
it is a 4.5-hour movie. So,
well, I even tried the new series of The Stand, and I managed a couple. And then it just got, I don't know, it seemed to be not that close to the book. Again, I enjoyed the book, and it was just, it was just like, I like all the bit where people are dying of Captain Trips, so that's great, but then when it moves on to that, and it becomes something else, and it's about the good and evil and all that, and it's just like, I think some things are probably better as a book. You know, should be left well alone.
Yeah.
Don't try and make, because something like The Stand really should only be a book. I don't think they've had how many goes at it now to make a film it, and it never works out. Never works out well.
I actually I have a soft spot for the McGarris 90s version of The Stand. I think it's a decent adaptation. But yeah, you're right. This new one was kind of weird. Also, like the story structure in it was really weird. Especially like the early episodes where it kind of like just jumps back and forth between the timelines.
Yeah,
and
I was getting confused.
I'm a huge fan of that book. I've read it, you know, two or three times as well, and I was getting confused. And like my wife, who hasn't read the book, and she never saw the original movie, like she was completely lost in it. You know, she had no idea what was going on.
Oh, bless.
I felt like it was like something that they shot for fans of the book, not necessarily for everybody.
Yes, I kind of got that impression.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Well, Tim, I want to hear more of Malignant Summer. Do you have a reading for us?
Yeah, I do.
Yay.
Just for a little context, this is a part of a scene that takes place in like the front half of the book. It's basically through one of the main characters, POV's Jewel. And she is on her way home from the movies going through the woods when she stumbles upon two teenagers, doing stuff to each other. So I will start now. Rudy removed his shirt in one swift motion. This was escalating fast. Jules felt an exhilarating rush, this voyeur business, pretty satisfying. She was a little ashamed to admit such a thing, but, well, this was cool, kind of neat, a real thrill. Better than the movie, she mused. Rudy unbuttoned Lisa's blouse, revealing the stark white of her bra. He kissed her exposed neck, and she moaned, reaching for his belt buckle. This was going to happen. Shit is going down. The no-pants dance. Wait, Lisa said in a breath, her eyes shooting open, wide and watery. She grabbed his hand, which had migrated to her southern parts, and gently removed it. Do you hear that? Rudy pretended like he'd heard nothing and kissed the smattering of freckles across her chest. His wet lips meeting flesh echoed throughout the night, rivaling nature's serene sounds. 3 seconds later, Lisa was shoving his hand away from her. "I'm serious," she said in a panicked yet hushed voice. Jewel tuned her ear to the forest, but couldn't pick up on anything threatening. Nothing growled, nothing howled. There were no sounds of marching feet stampeding through the wild brush. It was like it had been, a calm and peaceful night amongst the gentle chords of a flourishing ecosystem. All perfect, almost, invigorating and refreshing. Jewel felt more alive tonight than she had in weeks, months, maybe her entire life. "I don't hear shit," Rudy said, killing the moment, and in all likelihood, any chance of steering the ship back on the path to Frisky Town. "Come on, let's do this. Tonight, it'll be special." Lisa glanced around the woods, her eyes soft and jittery as they fell on the trees, the path, and eventually the starry sky. "No," she said, as if the night and everything that had happened was one major disappointment. "No, we can't." "What are you talking about?" Rudy's tone had grown fiery hot. Jewel recognized it at once, the heated inflection. It usually meant things were going to get a whole lot worse from here on out. There might be yelling, screaming, and maybe, just maybe, violence. Yes, that voice often led to thrown objects and bloody lips, scars of varying depths, emotional and physical. "We planned this," he said. "This was supposed to be our night." "I know," she said, almost pleading with him. "But it feels wrong, doesn't it? Plus, I heard something." Her eyes wandered the dark. "Something out there." Rudy shook his head. He'd clearly had enough. "You didn't hear anything. Why are you being such a dick?" "I'm not being a dick. It's just, this was supposed to happen. Tonight. Here." He pointed to the ground just beyond where Jewel could see. "I even came out here earlier and laid a towel, so you wouldn't get dirty." She pivoted back and forth as if expecting some monster to come bursting through the trees. I don't think my first time should be in the woods." Rudy huffed. "Whatever." He snatched his shirt off the ground, shook out the dirty and clingy wood chips, and threw it over his head. "God forbid it's not a 5-star hotel, fucking princess." "Fuck you, Rudy," she spat, pushing him. "Yeah, because I really want to do you now." Rudy rolled his eyes, grabbed his stomach, and chuckled in her face. Jewel wanted to march over there and uppercut him in the gonads, but she refrained and kept hidden in the shadows the pines provided. "You really need to lighten up. You're always wound so..." A shadow emerged from the trees on the other side of the ravine. It was a pale figure wearing a ripped t-shirt and jeans sliced open in several places. The kid, no older than 17, had long curly hair, dark as the backdrop the woods presented. It looked like he crawled through a patch of thorn bushes, his clothing reduced to mere rags. "Help me," the kid shouted, his voice hoarse, as if he'd spent the whole night at a concert screaming the lyrics of his favorite song. "Help me, for fuck's sake." "Holy fuck," screamed Rudy. He took off in the opposite direction, not even waiting for the kid to explain himself. Lisa sprinted after him, screaming bloody murder, a shrill outburst that pierced the air and silenced the forest's wildlife.
"You can't stop there. That's just
wrong." "That was good. I like that.
Keep going." "And,
well, thank you.
And when you sign my copy, that's XTINA.
Don't give in.
Hopefully I get...
Don't give in. She's relentless.
Yeah,
no, you read
some,
that well, too.
Oh, well, thank you.
I listen to audiobooks and auditions and all that stuff, and you could read your own audiobook. You did great.
Well, thank you. I hate the sound of my own voice, though, when I hear it back, so, like, there was no way I'd be able to narrate my own audiobook. But that's nice of you. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, no, I feel the same. I you know, people tell me all the time that I have a great voice, and then I actually listen to it again, and no, it's awful, just awful. So maybe it's the way we hear it is different than it sounds or something. I don't know.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't sound bad when I hear it when I'm speaking now, but if I were
right
to record this and play it back, I would cringe the entire
Exactly. I think most people are like that.
But obviously these people who do the audio, but they must like their, because they will listen back to, they must like their own voice.
Yeah.
You know, I'm with you. I hate mine. I hear mine back when I edit the sound levels on the show, you know, for the archive in it, and it's like, well, I don't sound like that. What is that ludicrous accent all about, you know, I think? And it's like, what? what is going on with you? But and yet people say to people, oh, they love your accent. No, I don't have an accent. You lot have the accent.
Yeah.
I do not.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. All my family is from the South, so they all have like thick, heavy Southern accents. I always make fun of them, and then they're like, "We don't have the accent. You have the accent." I'm like, "I don't have an accent."
Well, my daughter, I mean, she was one when we moved here. She's actually 12 a week on Saturday, bless her. And of course, she's got the Southern Belle accent with y'alls and heya. I'm going to brush my heya. Since when did hair have three syllables, daughter? And then she has to go at me when I slip up, if I call soccer, I call it football, and obviously, because that's what it is. You know, or sometimes it's funny we understand each other, but less and less, as I think, as we're getting on, because she's more Texas than most Texans, I think. But sometimes she looks at me like, what are you saying, father? What? What are you on about?
Texas will do that to you. I was born in upstate New York, and then we moved to Texas when I was about 4. And my relatives could not understand me. They said I sounded that, that Southern. I don't anymore, thank God, but at least I don't think I do. But so I think it's just Texas. Texas does that to you.
It must be.
I'm blaming
Texas.
Yeah.
I don't think I have any trace of a Texas twang at all. I really don't.
No, I don't think so.
Not really. No. Texas, Yorkshire, that's me. So, Tim, obviously, you're a Stephen King fan. I think most horror writers are. Who else do you like to read?
Oh, man, I mean, I'm a huge Robert McCammon fan. I love all his stuff. Some other, writers like Brian King, I'm a big fan of. Joe R. Lansdell, I love all of his stuff.
Yeah,
Clive Barker, Joe's obviously.
Brilliant. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some newer stuff, like I'm a big Ronald Malfi fan. I dig all of his stuff. So many writers. So many.
Awesome. Yeah, I must admit, I think Clive Barker has been, I think I'm probably more of a Clive Barker. I mean, I love Stephen King to bits, but Clive Barker... I like Clive. Obviously, he's a Brit. James Herbert. I don't know if you ever came across James Herbert. He was my introduction to horror. The very first grown-up horror book I read was back in middle school, which was The Rats. A big, big impact. And I am, unlike you, I very, very, very rarely read a book more than once because, I obviously know what's happening. But I actually, a few years ago, bought a first edition of The Rats and read it just for the nostalgia. I mean, it's not a very thick book. It didn't take me that long to read it. But, it was just streets ahead of its time. Streets and streets. It was the dawn of the splatterpunk era, they say. And just the visceral descriptions and... it was just fantastic. So big fan. And I say Clive is funny. I think I've told this story before. Clive Barker. I remember reading the Books of Blood back in the mid '80s. At a time when I've been writing, trying to write for quite a few years then. I was through university and what have you. And I read Books of Blood, and I didn't write another word for probably 10, 15 years because I could never achieve that level of originality, that level of writing, just the style. And I just thought, that's it. I could never do that. Now, I would never dare compare myself to Clive, but, I'm at least confident enough to be out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a lot of writers have done that. They've compared themselves to like their heroes and be like, I'm never going to be able to write as good as this. Why even bother? I think that's like a completely normal writer thing to do.
Oh, right. So it's not just me.
I did that like 5 times last year, so it's completely
normal. Okay. Nice to know I'm in good company then. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
What are you working at now, Tim?
So I have a dinosaur western that I wrote last year in quarantine.
I want that. I want a copy of that. Dinosaurs and cowboys. What could go? You know, what could be better?
Yeah, it's basically the Wild West as it was, but instead of, you know, animals, there's just dinosaurs roaming around. So I wrote that. It's about 80,000 words. I need to do like probably another draft or two on that. So if I can sell it, it might come out next year, maybe.
Yeah, if you are looking for a publisher, send it to us. We will publish that.
Oh,
seriously.
Yeah.
Yes.
Excellent, man.
I'm picturing the cover art now, to be honest with you. So, yeah. So, dinosaurs, you had me at dinosaurs. Send it over. We will publish it.
I love writing that. Well, one of my other publishers that I work with, Severed Press, they do a lot of, like, monster and creature features. I did a dinosaur mm-hmm. book for them a couple of years ago, and it was one of the more fun things that I've ever written. I grew up on dinosaurs, and you know, and
me too. Absolutely.
It's fun
yeah.
to like,
okay, I'm going to ask, which is your favorite dinosaur?
I mean, I'm a classic T-Rex guy, but, mm-hmm. I don't know. I've used this dinosaur in both books, the Gigantosaur, and
mm-hmm.
it's like just, it's a T-Rex, but it's just like a bigger, more powerful T-Rex.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
can't go
I have to
that.
Say, I've always had Stegosaurus. Always,
you know,
there's something about Stegosaurus that I just love. And Triceratops is always jolly as well.
I can't believe you said that. As a kid, I always had the answer to Stegosaurus, and I don't even.
Yeah.
Now I can't really tell you why that was, but that was my go-to answer when I was younger. So, and you know, as an adult, nobody ever asks you what's your favorite dinosaur is anymore.
I know, they should.
I think that's sad.
They should.
Yeah.
Yes.
That should be like the first question on any job interview. Like, what's your favorite dinosaur? I can know everything
yes.
about you.
Yes, you could. Definitely, yeah, that they should do. And, yeah, when you meet people, I mean, here in Texas, I mean, again, it's a bit of a culture shock for me, is they will ask you what job you do. They will ask you what you earn. They'll ask you what church you go to. I mean, like you say, it really should start off with, you know, what's your favorite dinosaur? Because it would
yeah,
be...
Yeah,
or
prehistoric creature. Just pick one.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so those giant sloths were kind of neat as well.
Yeah.
I did like them.
Well, I hate to do this, Tim, but we are just about out of time for our first segment. So before we let you go, can you tell us where we can find you online?
Sure. I'm pretty much only on Twitter and Instagram these days. So you can find me, you look me up, Tim Meyer. I think it's at Tim Meyer 11. You can find me on there. And I have a website called, it's timmeyerwrites.com. And all my stuff is on there. You can purchase signed books directly from the site.
Alrighty, I will get you links put up on our Facebook page. If anyone wants to stalk you, they can go there and do it. And I can't wait to have
Perfect.
You back. So get to finishing your dinosaur book, and we're gonna have you back for that one.
Well, get that. I shall be looking out for that. I shall expect to see that in my inbox shortly. But absolutely, thank you so much for joining.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Hey,
absolute pleasure.
Thank you guys
thank
for
you.
Having me. I've had a
thank
lot of fun.
Thank you. Yeah, right. Us too. Have a great rest of your evening.
You too. Bye bye.
Okay, bye bye. And yeah, it is. It's time for a break. Time to for you to top up your wine carafe, and for me to go and empty myself. So we will be right back.
Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James, and darkpoetprincess.com for Xena. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media. Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Day is dawning on a Texas Sunday morning. How I long to be there with Marie, who's waiting for me there. Every lonely city where I hang my hat ain't as half as pretty as where my baby's at. Church bell ringing, hear the song of joy that it's singing for the sweet Maria and the guy who's coming to see her. Just beyond the highway there's an open plain, and it keeps me going.
Part 2.
You know, that's one of those songs that you can't help but smile. You cannot help but smile. Even though it's a guy who's obviously directionally challenged or can't read a map or doesn't understand GPS, to be honest, because, you know, it's like, look, Tony Christie, look it up. You know, don't make a 3-minute production out of it. Look it up. You know, Google it, something. Google Maps. Then you will know where Amarillo is, you know? It's like
right,
one of my
right.
Actually favorite song of mine. I can't remember who sang it now. Is this the way to San Jose? You know, just
not the right.
Yeah, look it up. You know, I mean, don't make a song, literally make a song and dance out of it. You know, it's
the first song you played, what's that, In the Mood? Is that what it's called, In the Mood?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, last year, it was either last year or the year before, you played it on one of our shows, and I spent a good couple of months trying to figure out what it was. You know, it's really hard when you can't,
ask
Google.
You
can't really ask Google. Yeah.
You didn't have the sense to ask me. which could have really settled it within minutes if you'd have said, "Hey,
that's
Jimbo, what song was that?" But,
yeah, I like that.
You know,
I do too. Yeah.
Part of my eclectic music taste. My dad was a big. He was actually played in a jazz band back in the day, and he was a big jazz fan. Big Glenn Miller. He introduced me to Glenn Miller. I mean, obviously not personally, because Glenn Miller he died mysteriously. Never found his body. Apparently.
Interesting.
I think it's during the war. His plane just disappeared. But yeah, and I it's just great. I mean, as I say, it's just such a jolly. You know, one of those songs that puts a smile on your face straight away.
Not
like those Live Aid ones. It's all about famine and starving people. It never cheers me up, really, to be honest.
No.
It's a bit grim.
Eclectic taste. Speaking of them, my son is trying to learn the guitar, and he's doing all these like Metallica and Slayer, and really. Just ugh. Anyway, last night he leaves the kitchen where he was doing some chores for mom, and he leaves the kitchen and he's got his music playing and it's Tchaikovsky. So I'm like, you got Slayer Tchaikovsky.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm like,
brilliant.
I'm like, you should combine those somehow and really have something there. Yeah. So I thought
To be fair, Jeff Lynne and Roy Wood did that back in the 60s, so, 60s and 70s with the Electric Light Orchestra. And that's what they did. They combined classical music with contemporary music and, did rather... I'm a big, big Jeff Lynne fan, I have to say. I love ELO. I'm impressed. I think Sean, he's great. He reads books that... I would want to tackle, which is brilliant, and the fact that he reads, he is a 16-year-old, is he 16, 17?
Who, 17 now, yeah.
17 now. Of course he did, yeah. Who reads?
Yeah.
My son, and again, he's kind of proud of the fact, I can't remember, I think the last books he read was we got in the box set of... The Hunger Games, I think. Yes, it was Hunger Games, I think. And he would read. I would read them after him.
Yeah, they're good books.
And,
yeah.
I mean, but to be fair, we're probably talking about 8 or 9 years ago now.
Right.
Kids these days don't read, and it's a dying art. My daughter, again, she'd rather sit and watch TikTok and that than read a book. You know.
Yeah, the books that he's reading, he's so excited about them, and he'll come over to me and want me to read a paragraph or something, and he'll want me to tell me all about it. And oh my goodness,
sit and you listen and you look interested. You encourage the boy. Encourage him.
I do, but there's, part of me that's like, wouldn't you bother, why don't you try Stephen King or, something.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you go watch Pornhub or something. Something that 17-year-old boy is supposed to be doing. Reading. How dare you? You pervert.
I know. Yeah. I know. Especially I'm really impressed with his what he reads. When he comes to me and he wants, this book or that book, I'm like, are you serious? I can't even read the synopsis.
He got bored halfway through the synopsis.
Like, it just makes no sense to me, but he loves it, so go for it.
Well, brilliant. I was always a big reader from when my mom taught me to read when I was like 4, so I was reading well before I started school, always, because again, we didn't have, the PlayStation, all the electronic stuff and the TV was, and again, people laugh at me, we had a black and white TV, there was literally 2 channels, and when there was nothing on, there was like an hour and a half of kids' TV, from 4 o'clock till 5:30 when you got home from school. That was about it, So they didn't have all that. So it was books, and the trip, our fortnightly trip to the library was a big event, and it was fun, and got books, you know, I used to read and I was just a plow through books at such a rate. I mean, I've always been a fast reader. That's probably from then, you know, and I would just munch through books like you wouldn't believe, you know.
Yeah.
So, but now it is a dying art. Kids just don't seem to. I mean, there will always be a place for books, you know, and hopefully, even if it's just, you know, to spawn movies. Although even that now, you know, the originality in the movie, I mean, everybody's excited about the, well, everybody's excited. There's all the adverts, like this Godzilla versus Kong movie. I mean, seriously, phone in, write in, anybody who's listening, who is actually excited about that? It's two CGI, it's basically a big cartoon. It's two CGI things fighting each other. I mean, I just don't care. I really don't care. I would rather watch a good, you know, human interest, well-written, you know, piece, but not, no. You know, it could probably appeal to 7 or 8 year old boys who just like destruction and shit, but I can't see anybody, I can't see any other demographic getting too frisky about that.
Yeah, I watched the reboot of, Wrong Turn. I guess it's a reboot.
I watched that about a week ago. What did you think?
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. It was an interesting take. But again, to me, it didn't have anything to do with the original movie. So I was like, why don't you just name it something else? And, you know what I mean? Like, why did they have to, it's a reboot or Wrong Turn. It's really not. So
of all the titles they could have come up with, they didn't have to.
Cashing
in on. I mean, to be fair, the first couple of Wrong Turn movies were brilliant. And then it got
all
a bit silly and a bit crappy. The first one was great. I mean, it was like you say, it was whatever it was, an hour and a half or so of killing and blah, blah. Yeah, I can't really remember a lot of it. It didn't leave a lasting impression on me, to be quite honest.
I didn't hate it, though.
Yeah, yeah. I did watch an interesting movie called Cherry. Not a horror. It was about basically, it was just a life story of this young man, disenfranchised young man who went into the army, went into the First Gulf War, and he came back and went into a crime. But it was incredibly well written, very well acted, very, very well done. I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, totally not, you know, what I'd usually sit and watch, but I'd read some good reviews about it. Thought, well, yeah, give it a go, and enjoyed it. It was good. I would recommend it. If you want something a bit different, it was good.
I didn't realize
until like the second or third, probably like the third one, he sort of went into robbing banks, and each of the banks had one, it was like a parody name of the banks. One was just called, the first one's called The Bank, and I didn't really think it. Then the second one, instead of Citibank, it was called Shitty Bank. And then it got, and then there was another one like Screw America Bank sort of thing, you know. And it was just, but it was just a little, and it just had that bit of dark humour running through it that was really fun. So I would recommend it. It was fun. So anywho, what have we got? What is happening? What's going on?
For our next guest of the night, we have horror author Sherry Sebastian Gabriel.
Woo! Hello.
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 Hello. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Good. Before we start, obviously, this is going to be the question now we will ask all our guests. What is your favorite dinosaur?
My favorite dinosaur? Oh, my gosh. Plesiosaur, right? That's the one that lives in the ocean. Yeah, that's the water.
Technically, I'm gonna play my zoologist card now. Technically, not a dinosaur. Sorry.
Aww.
But no, but we will let you have it.
We'll take it.
Yes, because plesiosaur is an awesome beast.
Yeah.
I decided I'm
absolutely
going to add that question on our 11 questions. I'm going to add that one.
Which, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
it,
that's
it,
a fucking
it, I think, as Tim said, it needs to be the only question. I mean, we just tell so much about people from that. So thank you for joining us, Sherry. Obviously, you're not here to talk about dinosaurs. Here to talk about your book, Spirits, although dinosaurs, you know. Tagline, an alcoholic who faces the literal spirit of a young woman she accidentally killed. I'm intrigued. Literal spirit. Explain. Yeah.
Oh, well, my protagonist, Tori Garrett, accidentally hit and killed a teenage girl with her car. And she sort of hits rock bottom and turns to alcohol as a means to cope. And her life kind of falls apart. And she decides to get away from it all and goes to the seaside town, Cape May, New Jersey, to dry out and try to reassemble her life. Only the spirit of the girl that she killed keeps haunting her. As do the spirits, the alcoholic spirits that she can't stop consuming. So she kind of becomes a mess.
I like
awesome.
It.
Awesome. And New Jersey again. We're having a bit of a New Jersey theme this week.
I was listening in. I was listening in when Tim was on, and I'm like, I'm in New Jersey as well. I'm actually in North Jersey. In the middle of nowhere, so not quite as quaint as Cape May, but
so how do you feel sort of living in the country's joke state?
It's a weird place, isn't it? I mean, we like the sort of like the mythology in New Jersey is weird. We have all these weird things like the Jersey Devil. I'm sure you've heard of like the hockey team, but no, it's the literal Jersey Devil.
I'm familiar with the story.
Sort of like legends and just such a weird state. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's
well, so in England, we have Wales, which is. Kind of stuck on there, and the Welsh are very, very, they get the brunt of a lot of, the Irish used to get a lot of brunt of our jokes as well, so nobody dare joke about Yorkshire though, because we'd have them.
That's fair.
Oh yeah.
When we talk about the joke state, I just have to say that do you see the Florida man memes? I mean, I think if anybody's going to pick on, we should pick on Florida. I really do.
Absolutely.
I think awful. So yeah, I don't think I had ever thought about the New Jersey being a joke thing there. I mean, I don't watch those the animated shows that you're talking about, so maybe I just didn't get it, but no left turn, that's weird, that's really weird.
It is so weird. And you can't make a U-turn. It's like there's like if you go to a median, you just have to go to some other like right turn to make a U-turn. I can't even like explain it. It's so weird.
That sounds very odd.
You could place a bizarro novel there, and it's not even a joke. You'd be like, this is just it. It's not really, we're not trying to be funny now.
Yeah, this is true. This is our life. Yeah.
Oh, that's sad. So, Sherry, do you have an excerpt? I want to hear more about spirits. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
Absolutely. Just to kind of give a little background, at this point, Tori is staying at an off-season bed and breakfast in Cape May, and things have gone sideways for her. So let's join in with her.
Okay.
The second-floor communal bath floor had a permanent layer of grit from thousands of sandy bare feet padding to and from the toilet and bathtub. Tori leaned over the toilet and vomited clear fluid into it. Shuddering, she peeled off her clothes and shuffled to the glass-encased shower. The mirror over the sink revealed brown-red droplets across her ghost-pale face. She screeched open the glass. Nightmare memories of the telephone booth at the dead end swirled in her mind. The voice from the phone echoed. She stepped in and yanked the door shut until it sealed. The water sprayed down cold at first. It shocked her back to life and gradually warmed.
Red gathered at the drain, and she stumbled backward. It smelled rusty, and soon it ran clear. Tori unwrapped a bar of soap and ran it over her body, lathering up the grime and sweat that lived on her skin. There was something about the boxed-in shower that made her feel safe and protected, even from the undulating tremors that constantly tormented her. It was the same comfort a blanket gave her. She knew the enclosure wouldn't protect her, but it brought her a moment of peace, and she relished it, even if she knew she'd have to leave the sanctuary and face reality sooner or later. Perhaps it was the same false sense of security that makes people hide under the blankets when they hear a strange noise in the night. Do they really think the blanket will stop someone from murdering them? Probably not, but it's soothing all the same. She closed her eyes, letting the warmth envelop her and the soap wash away all the bad things. Her eyes snapped open at a sound she couldn't quite place, a beige outline blurred against the pebbled glass of the shower doors. Her eyes were trained on it, hunting for movement. It was statue still. A flinch shuffled the watercolor painting blur, and Tori gasped, "Who's there?" Her voice bounded off the glass, every nerve tensed in her body. Exposed and vulnerable, a real person was far more of a threat than any ghostly figure. The enclosed shower grew darker. That chunky, grunting sound of someone clearing their throat rang out. She pressed her back against the smooth, cold tile. A sliver of shock went down her spine. The blurred, beige blob on the other side of the glass neared. It touched the handle to the door, and the entire glass rattled. Tori tried to breathe around the lump in her throat. Hot tears worked up in her eyes. The water continued its steady strum, but all the comfort it previously held was gone. Who is there? The door edged open, and some of the shower spray trickled onto the floor. Tori shouted. Her arms went defensively to her breast, and her leg lifted instinctively to accommodate some modicum of modesty. It was coming in. A yellow, puffy hand waved, almost like a party clown waves at a little kid. Its breath was heavy, perfumed with rot and the all-too-familiar fumes of booze. "Hey, pumpkin!" The voice growled hard from a life of whiskey sours and too many Marlboro Reds. Her tears came in jagged bursts now as she watched her father climb into the shower with her. He was swollen to twice his normal size. His skin looked like a bruised banana peel. "What's the matter, kiddo? Why don't you get on out of the shower and I'll take you down to the nut house for some pecan bars. Then maybe we'll hit the beach. Gonna pick up some provisions first, all out of Bacardi. What do you say? I'll even give you a sip of my rum and coke. It's been a while since you had a drink. Isn't it about time for another?" Tori stared. The water arced around him, never touching his clothes. He wore a brown sheepskin car coat and a floppy green fisherman's hat that made him look moronic. But the hateful glare in his eyes chilled her down to her bones, and she screamed so loud the reverberation rang out in her ears. She retreated to the tile wall behind her and raised an arm across her breast. "Dad?" The word croaked from her throat. The sound even shocked her. He extended a cartoonish, bloated hand. His expression was tender and empathetic. "Fatherly." The word infuriated Tori. Her father had never been fatherly. "Come on, get out of the shower. It's time to get something to drink. I know you're thirsty, baby." The whole body tremors overtook her. She needed to get out. She needed to drink. Her throat felt like hot sand. A heavy weight settled on her as she gathered her wits. She bashed herself against the glass and the door shimmied open. She felt exposed and scampered to pull a towel from the shelf above the toilet tank and wrap her body in it, eyes trained on the shower. The tinkle of water against bare tile floor was the only sound. She couldn't see inside. The door she'd opened swayed almost shut again. She hesitated for a moment, then moved, each step a shamble. She put a hand on the door and nudged it open with her fingertips, too afraid to reach out completely lest something clutch her by the wrist. The stall was empty. She stood shivering and wet, confounded and horrified. So the phone call was true, and it made no sense that it could be true. Had she spoken to her mother? It seemed nearly impossible that her mother would have been able to reach her on some rusted-out, sand-strewn payphone hundreds of miles from her home in New Hampshire. She snapped out of her stupor and realized she was making crazy-ass theories about her father's death based upon a vision that may not have even been real. She shut off the faucet. She dried herself, but the thought of going back to her room made her shudder. She'd have to face reality sooner or later, even if that reality meant jail time for walloping Amelia over the head. but now she was naked and growing colder by the minute. Tori walked upstairs and grabbed the same gin bottle she swore she'd hit Amelia with and took a drink. And that's where I'm going to stop.
They do that this to us all the time. They stop before we're ready.
Sorry.
That was good, though.
So, an interesting theme. What was the inspiration behind it?
I'll tell you, much like Tim's story, I this is actually has some basis in reality, but from a different perspective. In my town, a young kid, a 17-year-old kid, was hit by a car and killed tragically.
Mm-hmm.
Just a horrible story. And I remember thinking about that, and I remember, I've got kids, and I think your first instinct is, oh my gosh, this poor kid's family, how can they cope? I mean, it's just a horrible tragedy. And then I think I started thinking about the person who hit him. I mean, this sort of idea that, how does this person cope? How does this person, sort of move on with their life after such a horrible tragedy and such a horrible accident? And then that story started growing out of that. And this idea that this woman just sort of loses all grip of reality in just trying to cope with this tragedy. And I really thought it was kind of an interesting concept to blur, the ghost concept of spirits with the mm-hmm. booze type of spirits. And that's where spirits is born.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Wow. I like the idea. I mean, it's, it is one of those things that, people, I'm not condoning anything, but people do obviously sympathize with the families and all the rest of it. But yeah, not often do you see what happens to the people who did it. And obviously there must be an element of remorse and what happens to their life,
right?
Because it, something like that will destroy their life, I mean, I've known people in my past who just got caught sort of drunk driving, and they lost their license. And just the implications of that, a life change. I had a good friend of mine, and he was at a party at his house the night before, and he popped out for milk in a newspaper the Sunday morning afterwards.
Right.
And he just happened to be over the limit, and the cops pulled him, breathalyzed him, and his whole world collapsed. He lost his job, he lost everything. And it took him, a good few years to build back up again. So, like you say, if you've gone, you've killed someone because of that, I can imagine it's the impact is horrendous.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's so funny. It's not funny, but a friend of mine who read the book, called it the feel good book of 2019. I mean, it. I don't want to give away. Yeah, very, very tongue in cheek, of course. But it's such a tragic, a tragic thing, and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I love the premise. It's a fantastic premise. So is it available now, or is it
absolutely
out?
It's available.
It is brilliant.
Available through Haverhill House Publishing, and you can pretty much buy it, I think, wherever books are sold. So I know it's on Barnes & Noble, available at
mm-hmm.
Target.com. Of course, you get with Amazon.
And again, when you sign my copy, that's XTINA.
Well, I was going to say, unlike Xtina, I shall purchase a copy because I'm not tight fisted like she is.
Mm. I cherish my signed books. I do. So. No, what you were saying about nobody ever, hardly ever thinks about it from the other point of view. But I write poetry, and a lot of it is very angst, you know, very angsty and stuff. And I've done that occasionally where I try to put myself in the other point of view. And it's definitely interesting because I think that for most things in our life, you know, that happen to us, we don't do that. We don't sit back and go, wow, well, if I were them, what, you know, how would I be feeling? What would this, yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing to do. And I think that, I think that we should all do that sometimes. I mean, definitely in my life now, when it comes to maybe an argument or something like that, I always, you know, try to think about it from both perspectives, because I think we're very much, you know, we don't do that. You know, we just think from our own perspective, but, yeah.
I think as writers, I think, you know, it's part of the job. You know, you do, I think, more than, you know, muggles, I call them, which people who don't write, you know. I think, yeah, more
like
so
that.
Than the muggles, you know, we have to. We put ourselves in people's heads, you know, so,
yeah.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I think that's so important to really understand your character. You kind of have to get into that headspace. Absolutely.
Even if it's not a pleasant place to be. I mean, I you know, a lot of people said to me, I write character. A lot of my characters are not likable, which reflects the way I see the world, because I most people are not like. I don't like people, and people I tend to find are pretty horrible anyway. So, and that comes through, you know, for me, that's real life. People are not likable. You know, but getting into the heads of the unlikable people, it probably does just strange things to us, I dare say.
I think that people who are, like, either unlikable or just unreliable narrators, I love working in that sort of wheelhouse where you can really tell a story from someone's perspective. And I'm not a huge fan of perfect characters, because I think that's unrealistic. I think that everyone has flaws, and there's going to be something about someone that just rubs you the wrong way. But I think that makes for an interesting character, because I feel like you kind of have to finesse it and make people root for this person, even in spite of the character, even if they're just irritating and annoying and just maddening people.
Yeah. But that's what makes for good reading, you know. Like you say, if you're just all nicey-nicey. That's why I think, well, I never really got to grips with romance, because, you know, your traditional romance-y sort of book, everybody's nice and everybody's handsome and pert and beautiful and that. And life is not like that. It is just not, you know. For me, like you say, you know, give me a flawed character any day of the week. You know, the character in Spirits here is just the perfect flawed character. And it's almost a pleasure to join her in her torment.
Yeah, I think in some ways that's really true. You kind of want to see her squirm a little bit and get that. She has to earn that redemption, and I think that's part of the journey we have to take with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say it couldn't have been very comfortable for you trying to get into the head of an alcoholic. That must have been difficult. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how do you prepare for something like that? Unless obviously you're an alcoholic yourself.
I'm not.
I'm just valid point.
I know. I mean, I've had a lot of, you know, addicts in my life. You know, I've had relatives who've had substance abuse problems, and I think you kind of look at their life, you know, and, you know, I think you have to approach it with some level of empathy. I mean, it is a sickness, and but in writing Spirits, I mean, I did a lot of research into alcoholism and substance abuse, and trying to get into this sort of mindset of someone who literally cannot stop themselves, and someone who is ill. And you know, I don't think that people, I don't know, it's been my experience that when dealing with addicts, a lot of people, I don't know, they tend to think they're bad people, or they just lack self-control rather than seeing it as an illness and sort of meeting that with a level of empathy, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I like I said, I've seen it sort of firsthand. Not me, actually. Yeah. Someone in my family who, and it, at first, you know, until I understood it, I thought, well, you know, why can't I just stop? Just don't, you know, don't take the drugs, don't drink, don't do that. It ain't that easy, you know. Even when they want to, and they really, really want, they know what it's doing to them. They can't because it because of the very nature of it, it takes them over. And that's the same as anybody who's addicted to drink, drugs, food, sex. I mean, people can be addicted to pretty much anything. And it is, it's just a compulsion. And because it's the brain, you know, if the brain wants that, then, you know, it can be pretty much impossible to stop it, because that's your brain, and your brain is the control room, and it's going to do what it damn well pleases. So yeah, I have the empathy. It must be awful because they are self-aware. They know it's destroying them, and there's literally nothing they can do about it. It must be awful for terrible, terrible thing.
Wow, absolutely.
So on that cheerful note.
I was just going to ask Terry what he was working on now. Yes. Yeah, right.
Hopefully it's a comedy. Tell us it's a comedy.
It's actually very fun. Comparatively, it's actually a lot of fun. What I'm working on now is the first book in a series. It's called Southern Monsters. It's set in the South. I actually grew up in the South. So when I heard you were in Tennessee, Extina, I was like, yeah, I'm the same girl. I grew up in Georgia. So, you know, my next book is called Southern Monsters. It's about the Parrish sisters who are monster hunters. And I love the idea of being able to work with sort of Southern legends and Southern monsters because I feel like there's this rich folklore. You have so many things to tap into, Native American lore and African American lore and just these sort of like, I don't know, it's this interesting melting pot of legends to choose from. And I love the concept of that.
I do too. Awesome. Well, get to writing so we can have you back on. This was awesome.
Definitely. And absolutely.
Yeah, we are just about out of time for our show tonight. And you have to promise to come back. That's right.
I absolutely will. And thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun.
I was going to say, that's where I pause awkwardly to make sure you say you promise. So,
is legally binding now, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Tell us real quick where we can find you online.
Absolutely. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, Sherry Sebastian Gabriel. You can check out my website at sherrysebastiangabriel.com. That's me.
Awesome. Everybody go out and buy spirits. And I can't wait to have you back. Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. And we will speak to you again very soon.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, A, time has beaten us, and B, we've made it through the whole show without technical fuck-ups. So, hurrah! Huzzah, that's what I say. And I'm afraid it is time to say goodnight, Extina.
Goodnight, Extina.
Good night.
Oh, yeah. I'm the pretender. One can tell. Oh, yeah, I'm the great pretender. Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone.
Like a crown.